is quite a large disparity between perhaps how the sites are handled. So I'd like to again say we're really counting on DOE to aggressively ask for the dollars that are needed to meet the milestones, to meet that risk reduction schedule. We have reduced many of the uncertainties and complexities down to a realistic path forward. And so now we just need the dollars to fuel the journey. And that's really what I had on my mind for you all today. Do you have any questions?
That's quite a lot on your mind. That exact same thing is on my mind, too. Thank you. Thank you for that, Shell. I appreciate it.
Based on what you know, what kind of dollars do you think are necessary? I'm sure I'm going to ask this question later on, but I was wondering what you thought the number of dollars are necessary, and why don't we figure out a way of finding that on a daily basis?
Mm-hmm. Well, for FY14, it was $552 million, I think, in the liquid waste budget, and so we have actually sent a letter to our delegation asking for 112 more to be added to that 552 to be 664. And so that's really for just the liquid waste. We've also asked for additional money to be added to the salt waste processing facility budget. And so that would be a good start. So may not be everything needed, but it would at least get us on a footing that makes meeting those milestones at least it puts us on a better stead to meeting those milestones rather than derailing the whole strategy.
So you're thinking maybe an additional $150 million for a year?
Well, and it would have to be that same healthy level of funding continuing past FY14 as well.
So a good fine might be $500,000 as opposed to $100,000 per day?
Oh, well, and I appreciate that suggestion. So, thank you.
Shelley, are not some of the tanks that are in the water table leaking or have previously been leaking tanks?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, and from the primary structure into the annulus, yes. And in some cases, from the groundwater into the tank system.
So there's a path from liquid waste to groundwater at this point?
Yes.
And once you get the liquid waste and the groundwater, that would be very expensive to remediate, I suspect.
Right. I'd hate to think about being in that position, yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Shelley. Thank you. Okay, we're going to take about a 10-minute break. Just to remind you that the Energy Office is, if you want anything off the table, you're welcome to it. And we'll be back. Look at your watch 10 minutes from now. What's the Okay, I'm a real stickler for starting on time, but we're waiting for a critical piece of equipment to come back. So, since Jennifer gets back, we'll start. Because you need a pointer. Sorry. Oh, well. Now you have two, Doug. You can pick. Okay, now we have our essential equipment. Doug Hensey is going to give us a presentation on the FY14 budget and liquid waste operation impacts, which I think Shelley gave you a little preview of. Doug.
Good afternoon. My name is Doug Hensey. I'm the assistant manager for mission support and the acting chief financial officer for the Savannah Riverside. Today, like Karen said, I'm going to give you a presentation on the fiscal year 13, fiscal year 14 budget. Even in a normal year, the government funding budget formulation and appropriations process is a little bit unique, and this year it's been even more challenging than most. I'd like to start off first by just recognizing, you know, what Shelley said back there. A lot of the folks here in this room have spent a lot of time. We've been around since the 2005 timeframe as far as building that relationship, putting together plans and achieving those plans. And so we understand the concerns that Shelley and the state and EPA and the rest of the folks have, and we're trying to address those challenges. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to you, like I said, about the fiscal year 13, fiscal year 14 budget updates, and also about the impacts on the liquid waste program. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go back so that I can set the baseline. I'm going to talk a little bit about what we've accomplished in the 2012 timeframe, what we're going to be accomplishing in the 2013 timeframe within the budget that we have, and then what we're looking at for the 2014 timeframe. And then I'm going to be talking about some of the things that have been challenges to us, how we've tried to mitigate those challenges, and where we're heading in the future. I don't know if Karen, if you want to wait till questions at the end. I certainly have no objectives. There's a lot of questions that we've been asked. And so if you want to ask questions while I'm going for it, I don't have any issue with that. I don't have a train of thought, so you can't get me off.
I would say that's very comforting to know. I would say if we need clarifying questions, let's ask them, but let's not get into the questions that might lead to discussions till after we've heard the whole presentation. That works for you guys.
All right. With that, let me go forward. I'm going to talk about 2012. I have a couple things first up here on the handout that are incorrect, and they're what you see in the blue there, and that's the for the 700 containers of the non-moxable plutonium. We packaged them. We haven't shipped them all off to WIP. We've only shipped off 33 of them in 12, another 66 in 13. So we still have to ship that off. And then down below, you see it has 336 for the amount of waste that we shipped off. It's actually 1,050. But if you look here at the 12 accomplishments, so the reason that I consider this to be very important is because when you look at 12 and then you look at 13 and 14, you'll see the changes, because these are the sorts of scope that we do year over year, and you can see how the numbers may change in this year. Also in fiscal year 12, that was the last major year that we had funding from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And that was very important for the transuranic program and for the decontamination decommissioning project as we reduce the footprint on the site. So I'm going to go through here real quick before I get into the actual numbers so that you can see this. You can see we produced the most canisters that we had ever produced in the Defense Waste Processing Facilities, 275 canisters. We closed the two tanks that Shelley was talking about in the liquid waste. We have two more that we're planning on closing this year. And I'll talk a little bit more about what years we're going to do that and so forth. We started processing vulnerable fuels through the H Canyon. There's some of our spent fuel that we have in our basin that in discussions with the Defense Nuclear Facility Safety Board, our discussions, we're looking at there's the potential for that fuel to be vulnerable, so we've started to put together the processes so that we can pull that out and process that fuel so that we don't have to worry about that vulnerability in storage. I talked about the 700 overpack containers. We have some plutonium. We're working with the NNSA for preparing feed to the MOX, but there is some plutonium we have on the site that is non-MOXable, we call it. So that's, we need to disposition that. So we've taken some of that plutonium and we've actually put it in the form that we can ship it out to WIP. You can see we have 700 containers and we've shipped some of that to WIP already. Again, we continue to receive and store the used nuclear fuel. We have it from both foreign research reactor that is U.S. origin, we bring back to the site, as well as domestic research reactors from universities in the United States. And that gets brought back to the site and stored in our wet pool in the Bell Basin. We talked about the saltstone production facility, the actinide removal process, modular caustic side solvent extraction unit. Those are the ARPMCU is the interim salt processing capability while we build the salt waste processing facility. So we had an outage for that. Make sure that, because that initially was only going to have a lifespan of about 2 years or so, and it's gone beyond that. So we continue to make upgrades to that so that we can continue as the salt waste processing facility is being built. Same thing for saltstone. We need to make sure that the robustness of that continues to expand so that when SWPF comes on, it can take the throughput that will come from salt waste processing facility. Shelley talked about the transuranic waste. And we had a great year shipping off for that. The total amount of transuranic waste that we had on the site at that was legacy, that was here stored, was roughly 5,200 cubic meters. And at the end of this year here, we're down to the very final amounts, the 10 or 15, 16 cubic meters. We're expecting that we will have it all remediated, characterized, ready to ship to WIP. And then we just will have to finish up that shipment. Hopefully we can finish that in the 14th timeframe. The Recovery Act also, we reduce our industrial footprint. When we're talking about reducing the footprint, it's not taking the site boundaries and moving the site boundaries. What we're talking about is what we have to do as far as the cleanup and of the different parts of the site. So we have done that remediation. We've cleaned it up. So what we've done is shrunk what we're actually using for our industrial type of facilities down to, you can see, only 15% of the site. So that's what we will concentrate over the next 20 or 30 years. And then the last thing we talked about there is the D&D of three reactors. We had two of the production reactors, P&R, and then we had a test reactor that we completed the D&D for that. Everything I'm talking about here, as well as the accomplishments that we have for, or that we're planning on doing for 13 or 14, are contained in, we have an integrated life cycle cost estimate. So we have identified over the last 3 years every bit of scope in the environmental management program. And let me, you know, drop back one step. What I'm talking about today is the environmental management program. I'm not going to talk budget for the NNSA side, because we at the site, we're roughly a little over 2 billion, 1.2, 1.3 is EM. The rest of it is NNSA. Someone talk just to EM. But we have every bit of scope identified as far as the disposition of the liquid waste or the nuclear materials or the D&D of the facilities. The only question comes is when. We have the life cycle cost estimate, plans it out based on assumptions as far as the dollar funding that we have. So as we go forward, when we talk about things like the funding here, it's just a matter of where does that scope get shifted to. You get more money, you can shift and accelerate things. You get less money, it gets pushed out. And of course, part of the issue that we're talking about is as we push things out, then you potentially increase the risk by pushing it out. However, in not all cases does it increase the risk, because sometimes if you pull things forward, you can increase the risk because you're trying to do things maybe faster than the technology or the process would dictate. So it's a trade-off between, you know, at what is the proper time to do that scope. Okay, let me talk a little bit about fiscal year 13. We started out fiscal year 13 under a continuing resolution, and that was only through March 27th, okay? And that continuing resolution was based on what we received in fiscal year 12. And then, of course, you may remember the sequestration was supposed to go into effect on January 2nd. And then as we got to second, and that's important because one of the mitigating factors we actually took was prior to that January timeframe in anticipation of sequestration going into effect in January. But we came up toward January and Congress and everyone, I guess Congress, decided to move it back to March 1st. When they moved it back to March 1st, there actually was a change in what the impact of the sequestration. Originally, on the defense side, and we're considered on the defense side, the sequestration was supposed to be 9.4% or $109 billion. When it got pushed back to March 1st, that actually went down to $85 billion, which then was a 7.7% reduction for us. And basically, in the negotiations, there was found either that we had already started saving some of that $109 billion through tax increases, like the Social Security tax increase, or other cuts, or they just deferred some of the required reduction, so it went down to the $85 billion. And then, of course, we know on March 1st, it actually went into effect. So we had the sequestration go into effect while we were still under that CR that ran out on March 27th. Then on March 26th, we